Jokic behind his back. What a take by Jokic.
That's your sitter. Wow. Watch him back here.
Gentlemen, to the Pickaxe Pundit Show. I am your host, Zach Mikosh with DenverStiffs.com. You are listening to the Denver Stiffs Podcast Network. It is Monday morning on November 19th, and it is a bit of a dark one for Nuggets Nation. We spent last week dropping 3 of 4, including the latest that lost to the New Orleans Pelicans on, what was that, Saturday night. Nuggets now 10-6 on the season, in danger potentially of getting close to 500. If you look ahead, 3 road games this week, plus 1 home game against the Orlando Magic. Those 3 road games, though, tough opponents starting tonight with the Milwaukee Bucks. Then they'll follow that up with the Minnesota Timberwolves, the resurgent Minnesota Timberwolves, now that the Jimmy Butler issues are past them. And then, of course, they close out the week on the road against the Oklahoma City Thunder, who are red hot. So, to break down everything that happened last week and is coming up next week, we have 2 guests today. We'll start off the show with Mark Grimaldi from Boulder. Mark was kind enough to join us earlier last week, talk about that loss against the Rockets and then the bounce back game against the Atlanta Hawks, winning by 45. The Nuggets bounce back big time. It would not last, though, as we know, because then they, of course, lose to the New Orleans Pelicans. Like I said, I had Ashley Douglas on to talk about that, as well as this upcoming tough stretch of games they've got this week. So let's not delay anymore. All right, well, to talk about the Rockets game and then follow up with that win against the Hawks, I have with me down in Boulder, it is Chief Moderator Mark Grimaldi. Mark, what's happening?
How's it going, Zach? Thanks for having me.
Absolutely, man. I'm always happy to have the chief moderator on, because I know you have absolutely the worst job possible that Denver Stiffs has to offer.
It's a roller coaster. When the Nuggets are winning, it's not that bad, but you go on a 4-game losing streak and it gets rough.
It gets real bad. It's funny. The high point is it's not that bad, but the low point is like this. He's a giant dumpster fire. So I'm always glad to get you on, Mark, anytime. It is my pleasure, sir. And the other thing is, like, yeah, nobody has their finger on the pulse of Nuggets Nation, probably more than Mark Grimaldi. So I'll ask you, tell me this, yeah, where were they, where was the fans and the comment board, where do you think they were after that loss to Houston, how low were they?
So lower than I expected. I mean, it was a tough 4-game skid, obviously, but the speed at which people can turn on not only each other, which happened pretty quickly, right, but also on the coaching staff and the front office and Jamal Murray and anybody who's had a bad game, but then managed to forget that in the beginning of the season it was Paul Millsap they were mad at, and it turns quickly. But the good news is, if the Nuggets start winning again, I think people come around and go back to just debating whether Jamal Murray's a point guard and actual basketball issues like that.
Right. We actually get that. We get the Nuggets-centric conversation that you really can't get anywhere else. It's, I think, one of the reasons Stiffs has always been so much fun. What's so funny, though, is I remember – so, I mean, if people who've been reading my writing or listening to me, which is, like, probably – only myself, but let's be honest here. But I mean, you know, I've been with the Stiffs in terms of, I've been a commenter on the Stiffs since basically inception. And even back when they won 57 games, like, there were times we were like, we need to fire George Karl. This is completely terrible. What's wrong with these people? And it's like, guys, you just calm down for 5 seconds. I got so frustrated that season. There was a time where I was like, nope, I'm just done. I'm just not going to comment on Denver Stiffs anymore, because these people are just getting a little too crazy.
The good thing is it is a loud minority. The large majority of commenters on the site are dedicated fans who just want to talk about the Nuggets. But sometimes the smaller amount of loud voices drown it out.
Sometimes. And then that's when Mark comes in quickly with the band hammer and just
rake which it. I've been carrying with me lately.
Yes. He's has it at the ready at all times. Goes to sleep with it, in fact. we are way off topic. We're going to rein this thing back in. So, obviously, this week we opened it up with that Houston Rockets game, which was the fourth loss in the four-game losing streak. I mean, they just can't. The Nuggets, if there's one team they cannot get over, it is Houston. Like, that team, they have no way of defending the James Harden, Clint Capella pick and roll. Like, it just... That is the worst possible combo of players for the Nuggets to try and defend in the pick and roll situation, because Capella, I mean, he just rolls to the basket so well and so hard and that so quickly. When you have Jokic trying to hedge that screen and then get back and recover to Capella, you can't do it. And the thing is you can't. You've got to hedge out so hard because it's James Harden, right? I mean, this guy makes a living off of running the pick and roll and either A, getting to the basket himself, which he's one of the best in the entire league at, or B, he's a plenty good shooter and he's great at drawing fouls. So I don't know, Mark. I mean, is it just that simple that is the James Harden Clint Capella pick and roll is just something the Nuggets can't defend, or is there more to their struggles with this team?
So this game kind of surprised me. I would say in previous years, when Houston was a little more deep and maybe even a little more healthy, I do think they were kind of built to just beat the Nuggets, because the Nuggets in recent years have been a team that even when they were down, they might be able to outscore people. But playing Morey ball, the Rockets on any night can outscore anyone.
Right.
And then when Morey ball's not functioning, people aren't hitting threes, then like you said, they can just default to a pick and roll that is probably the thing the Nuggets are the worst at defending, except maybe corner threes, which is the other thing Houston loves and James Harden is great at passing out of. PJ Tucker's amazing on the other end, so whoever the Nuggets' best wing offensive player is going to be is going to have a rough night. Obviously Chris Paul's pretty great defensively, so is Clint Capella, so they're a well-rounded team. But with the way they've been playing this year, I really wish the Nuggets could have caught them at a time when the Nuggets weren't in sort of their biggest free fall of what has been the short segment of the season so far, because I really thought Houston was a little less deep, shooting a little less well, and this could have been the Nuggets' year. But unfortunately, they caught the Nuggets at the right time, and the losing streak continues.
Yeah, absolutely. They, it's a team that, I mean, there's a possibility, you're right, that if the Nuggets are at their best, they should be able to beat them, but it's just, I don't know. Like I said, there's just something about it. And you brought up Chris Paul, who's another guy who I didn't even mention. Another guy who can kill you in the pick and roll. And then he's especially got that mid-range game that's so deadly as well. It's just, it seems like this team, the Rockets pretty much have the Nuggets figured out at this point, right? And they're pretty much going to just work you down and beat you with their game. And as we saw in this one, if things even look remotely kind of close, I mean, the Nuggets weren't doing so bad. They were only down. In fact, they were up, I think they were up at half by 1 point. And then they just get obliterated in that third quarter. And it's because James Harden basically was like, all right, I'm just going to go ahead and do what I know works on you guys. And then he does that with Capella, and then pretty much it's game over, by the time they get into the fourth quarter. I mean, they hung around, but they didn't ever really get back within striking distance. Mark, do you think any of it had to do with the fact that the one guy who wasn't there anymore, that Carmelo Anthony, no longer a part of the Rockets?
I mean, that's the other streak that could have kept going, is since he left Denver, Melo has had a very hard time winning in Denver. So
I don't believe he has at all.
Yeah, so I was waiting for one of those streaks to come to an end, but unfortunately they managed to basically jettison him quickly enough to not have the Melo curse in Denver, which, I mean, at this point you got to say is a factor, because he just can't win games here.
That's right. They were like, all right, man, this is it. We were gonna wait and see, but Denver's up, and we know it's like an automatic curse. D'Antoni was like, get him out of here. Kick him off.
Exactly. which D'Antoni had to love to do after the entire New York incident.
Well, that and Jeff Bezdelic had to love. I mean, think about it. Bezdelic retires when Melo shows up, and then because Melo essentially got him fired, you know, back in 2004. And then as soon as Bezdelic says, okay, I'm going to come out of retirement, they released Melo. It's
yeah, big so, coincidence.
Yeah, right, exactly. The timing's just really weird there. So kind of a funny thing. But, yeah, of course, Nuggets, they dropped that game. That was the end of the four-game losing streak, though, luckily, because, of course, they get back on the horse. What better team when you've got a four-game losing streak? What better team than to see it come into your home court than the Atlanta Hawks, who are aiming for another high draft pick this year? The Nuggets, to their credit, I mean, they beat the Hawks by, what, like 45 points? I mean, you know, that's that, – I was talking with the guys over at Mile High Sports about this back on Friday, and it was, you know, I told them, I was like, it doesn't matter who you're playing in the NBA, man. Beating anyone in the NBA by 45 points is pretty darn impressive. That's tough to do. I think the big catalyst, obviously, in the game was Juancho Hernangómez. Juancho has the 25-point outing. I mean, he was hitting shots. He was active. He was looking good on both sides of the court. This is what now? I think game two with Juancho in the starting lineup. Mark, are you happy with that? Game three, right? Because he was the Bucks too. He was in that one. Do you think this was the right move? Or now that we've seen like a three-game sample size, do you keep going with Juancho? Is he the right guy at least until Will Barton comes back?
Absolutely. I'm thrilled he's getting this opportunity. I really thought coming into the year that if he could get a chance, he was going to surprise people. I actually think that I picked him as my breakout player on an earlier episode of this podcast. Nice. Before the season, because I just felt like people didn't understand what mono really does to a person. And his rookie season, he really showed promise. And I really thought if he was given the opportunity, he could capitalize on it. The question was whether or not he'd get the opportunity. So it's really a shame that Will Barton is out. But Juancho being able to come in, space the floor, he moves well, he can knock down shots, he's got a nose for offensive rebounds. All of a sudden, he seems to be a rim protector with these blocks. I don't know where that came from,
right?
But I'm not going to complain. But ultimately, I think it also allows the offense to flow in a way that will make it easier for Will Barton to come back. Because if there's a non-shooter like Torrey Craig playing the three, the offense has to adapt and has to change a little bit. And then Will Barton, a shooter, comes back, I think they have to adjust again. With the way that Juancho is playing, it feels to me like he's helping space the floor, he's helping the offense get going, but it should also be a seamless transition with Will Barton, another guy who can spot up and shoot and can cut, comes back into the offense, and they should be able to keep rolling. So kind of on all fronts, I support him starting, and I've been really happy to see how he's played.
Yeah, I tend to agree. You know, I mean, we've obviously seen the defense suffer a little bit, right? Atlanta game notwithstanding, but again, let's consider the opponent. They've pretty much the game against the Bucks and the game against the Rockets, right? They let those guys score quite a bit. Now, some of that's just like you just have those days where Brooke Lopez might go unconscious from three and knock seven of eight down on you, and that's just the way it goes, you know. Like, but the defense wasn't there those first two games when they brought Juancho in at the starting lineup, and then against the Hawks, we actually got to see, right? We got to see them hold them to 93 points, particularly in the second half, where we've seen in the past maybe Nuggets teams get a lead early on a team and then let them. We've seen some terrible third quarters in the past, and we saw one against Houston, but this time they absolutely come out. They put their foot on the throat and finish the game with a, like you said, a 45-point win. Pretty much behind Juancho, he was the guy, I think, on both sides of the court. Plus 46 for the game in 31 minutes. That's also very hard to do, no matter who you're playing in the NBA. I'm happy with it too, because it is a temporary thing. Look, there's no way you start Juancho or Torrey Craig or Malik Beasley or whoever over Will Barton, right? Will Barton is your starting small forward. And he'll be back hopefully sometime next month. So I think you bring up the great point there that, you know, with Wancho, he gives you something a little bit more synonymous to what Will Barton does on offense. And then, you know, you could say the same about Malik Beasley, but Wancho also gives you that added benefit right now, at least if you're getting that length as you're at your forward spot as well, which is something that they don't even have with Will Barton. So it can at least maybe help contain a little more on defense. So I would keep going with it as well. I mean, he seems to be playing really well. And obviously if he's going to shoot like he did against the Hawks, he's going to score points like that, then yeah, I mean, there's no reason to not continue to play him. The other kind of weird thing that happened with the starting unit, specifically in that Hawks game, obviously was Jamal Murray does not start the game. We find out it's later. He was late to shoot around, which is a no-no. If you remember last season, this happened one game as well. Something happened with Jamal, and I think it was the same thing. Maybe he was late to a shoot around and then ends up getting benched to start the game. Is it as simple as that? Should we look into this any more, Mark, or is it pretty much just, you know what, it happened and we just move on?
So I think really in the end, it's something that we just see and then move on. When I first saw the starting lineups announced, I thought it was very different before we knew why it happened. I thought it had been because of his play, which would have been an interesting move. I mean, he's certainly been having a down season except for a couple games and has just looked in a funk a little bit too, passing off of open shots, obviously still having trouble with some of the point guard stuff. But I don't know if moving him to the bench would end up being good for him. I mean, it might be something that lights a fire under him and gets him going, but it might also be the kind of thing that kills a guy's confidence or makes him upset with the team. And obviously the coaching staff knows him better than me, but that's something I think is a real risk for someone that it seems like the front office and the coaching staff has invested a lot of time in and really think is going to become the guy. But once we found out that it was based on him being late to shoot around, I mean, that's the same thing that happened last year, and he ended up starting last year. He came in and was starting this year. If it becomes a habitual thing, I think the question is more, why is he being late, and is there an attitude issue? But a one game sitting on the bench to start the game but still getting a lot of minutes in response to somebody being late makes a lot of sense to me, and it's holding guys accountable. So unless something happens again in the future, I think we just move on.
Right. This has the feeling to me of – he probably overslept, right? That seems like the most likely explanation is what happens here. Is maybe his phone died or something, and his alarm didn't go off in the morning, and that's why.
Right, we've all been late to things. This isn't like Ty Lawson missing a plane back in Vegas.
Yeah, exactly. Like anybody who's going to sit there and be like, "Oh, I can't believe he missed or was late to a shoot around." Like, come on, man, it happens. It is kind of weird that he seems to be the only one that it's now happened to 2 years in a row. But it's, again, I mean, if it happens one game out of 82, you can't really make too big of a fuss about it. Let me ask you this, though, Mark. I thought the funny thing was is I thought Monty Morris actually looked pretty darn good there with the starters. So what if let's say this, when Isaiah Thomas comes back, how do the Nuggets find minutes for both him and Monty Morris?
It's really one of the things I'm the most worried about. Monte has just looked so good. I mean, he's got the best assist to turnover ratio in the NBA. He's working hard. He's doing everything you could ask him to do. So I don't think you can just sit him down and tell him his season's over when IT comes back. Maybe when IT comes back, he's on a minutes restriction at first, which would help Monte still get minutes. But otherwise, I really think the only option is if you're running a rotation where Jamal Murray's getting some minutes at the shooting guard as well. So maybe when Gary comes off, Jamal slides over to the two and Monte can still get some run, and then IT can come in as well. So they're not all splitting point guard minutes. They're also splitting some shooting guard minutes, which could help on the wing since Will Barton and Wancho are the only real wings unless Torrey Craig's getting minutes. But ultimately, I think it might be the hardest thing that Mike Malone's going to have to decide this year, because there's not enough minutes for all those guys to get what they probably deserve.
Right.
If IT looks anything like the IT that played in Boston, he deserves a lot of minutes and should probably have been playing in fourth quarters. So we'll see how Malone does it, but I think that somebody could end up being unhappy, and it's going to be really tough on the coaching staff.
Yeah, I agree. You know, and the guy I think that just might end up being the odd man out right now is Malik Beasley, right? You think, look at the game against Atlanta. He played 24 minutes. That's maybe 24 minutes that are going to go to go over to Monty Morris, and then the 29 or so that he was getting, or the, I guess the 23 or so that Jamal was getting, because Jamal was coming off the bench for this one weird game, that would go to Isaiah Thomas. So that's kind of the predicament I think that they're in is like you said, they're going to have to find a way to have guys play some of those shooting guard minutes. And the other thing, hard part about it is you also got to find minutes now for Will Barton when he comes back as well. And so that's suddenly now you're asking yourself, well, should we be playing Juancho Hernan Gomez, or should we be playing Will Barton? Should we be playing Trey Lyles? Obviously, you're going to want to play Barton, right? So where are you going to find those minutes? You could potentially not play Monty Morrison and use those minutes by switching up your rotation and giving Jamal a lot more time as shooting guard, because you can play Isaiah Thomas 30 minutes if he's healthy. So that it's gonna be an interesting one. I'm curious to see what happens. Like you are, I think it's gonna be. We'll find out a lot about Coach Malone and handling his rotations. That's for sure, if he gets everybody healthy. Because we didn't even talk about Michael Porter Jr. So
true, or Jared Vanderbilt,
or exactly. It's a good problem to have. All right. Well, I think we will wrap up this segment here. Then we'll let Mark get out of here, and then we will roll into next. Rattler going back over that. I can't even remember. We're just gonna keep on rolling. We're gonna roll off of this, and we'll get on with the show. But Mark, appreciate you being on, sir.
Thanks again. It was fun.
We've all been there. When the budget's the tightest or a time is the shortest, that's when disaster strikes. The last thing anyone wants to deal with in these times is an electrical issue in their home or business. Maybe your light suddenly won't turn on, or maybe a home inspector wants that electrical service changed before you can close out on a property you're selling. Heck, maybe it's not even an emergency at all and you're just looking to finish out your basement or get some power ran to that new AC unit. Whatever your need may be, give Sun Electrical a call. They're a family-owned and operated business that serves the Front Range, and you can be assured that you'll not only get the highest quality service, but you'll also get the most affordable price as well. Mike, the owner of Sun Electrical, will come to your home or business personally to evaluate your situation and provide a free estimate. And he stands by the work Sun performs as a fully licensed and insured electrical contractor. So give him a call, 719-659-6888. Don't be fooled by the phone number, as they'll serve the entire Front Range from Colorado Springs to Fort Collins and everywhere in between. That's 719-659-6888. 719-659-6888. Sun Electrical, the home of truly affordable electrical work.
Welcome back into the Pickaxe Pundit Show. I am Zach Mikosh with DenverStiffs.com. We spent the first half of that show talking with Mark Grimaldi, going over that loss to the Rockets and then the bounce back win against the Atlanta Hawks. It, of course, though, would not last, as the Nuggets ended out the week losing to the New Orleans Pelicans as they start a 3-game road swing. To talk about that, I'm going to bring in Ashley Douglas from Colorado Springs. Ashley, what's happening?
Not much. The ice melted, so life is great.
That's right. Yeah, it was a rough weekend of weather for sure. Because not quite snow, but that freezing rain. That's like the worst thing to drive in out of anything.
Yeah, I couldn't pull into my garage last night. It wouldn't. My car would not go up the hill. So
that's always the worst. That's. Yeah, that was. I had to drive somewhere yesterday, and I tried to. We have a slanted driveway as well, and it was a hairy proposition just trying to get into the car.
Oh, that's great.
I'm sure it was entertaining for my neighbors to watch, though. Enjoying it. But yeah, so it also over the weekend, not only bad weather, but bad play from the Denver Nuggets. They dropped the game against the New Orleans Pelicans. They lose that one 125-115. They have now lost 5 of their last 6. I mean, I guess to put it simply, Ashley, what happened? I mean, so the offense looked really good in that first quarter, right? They came out firing. They scored, I think, maybe like 32 points in the first, 35 points in the first quarter. Was really playing well. Kind of kept flowing into the second quarter, but by the end of the half, it really stalled and then didn't do anything in that second half. I mean, what happened to that offense that we saw in the first? Why weren't they able to carry that throughout the game?
You know, oddly enough, I think it's a defensive problem. I know that sounds strange, but I think, you know, you have a big man like Anthony Davis, who's nearly impossible to stop. And I don't know why they quit playing the defense they were playing earlier this season. It just seemed to kind of fall by the wayside. And my opinion is that they just get overwhelmed. You know, you have Anthony Davis who's just, you know, controlling the game, and they give up, and they think that they can't dig out of that hole. So I don't know if Jokic was playing hurt, but it seemed like he was.
Right.
He said he was fine, but I just was like, I don't know. I mean, if you're fine, you're kind of like maybe not playing like you're fine now.
Right.
'Cause I think he had some great stuff in the first quarter, but he didn't make a shot till the third quarter again.
Right. Right, yeah, and he definitely faded down the stretch as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was...
So I don't know.
So that's kind of weird with Jokic, right? Because he had that... It was like he like slipped on like a wet spot or something on the floor.
Yeah,
and then
he
looked like he tweaked his leg. Stayed in the game. But yeah, after that, because he was off to a tear. I think he had something like 18 points in the first quarter. He was... like you mentioned, I mean, they weren't playing any defense at all, but Jokic primarily was getting anything he wanted on the offensive end, and I guess maybe that's the easiest way to say what happened to the offense after that first quarter is Jokic just stopped scoring, mm-hmm. and that's a good point. He very well could have been because he was hurt because of that weird sort of situation where he slipped there. He certainly didn't look the same afterwards. That definitely brings them down. The other thing I noticed, they seem to stop, and it was funny because it was New Orleans was the team who was on the back-to-back, not the Nuggets, but
right.
They stopped, they looked like they were tired, and they stopped trying to get to the rim, they stopped dominating in the paint like they were in the first quarter, and they pretty much just were settling for three-pointers, and they were hitting some, don't get me wrong, I mean, some of those guys were knocking down those shots, but they were pretty much exclusively shooting jump shots at that point, and they didn't get enough of them to fall with not playing the defense, you know, they're
just killing. You know, I heard Chris Marlowe say something, and I can't recall if it was this game or last game, but he said, you know, if you're going to abandon defense, you have to at least score 120 points.
Right.
At least. And, you know, that's a good point. You know, the Houston Rockets kind of did that last season where, you know, they played some defense, but, like, mostly they just bombarded their opponent with offensive shots, and that got them a long way. And the Nuggets aren't that team. You know, I think their offense struggled a little bit early on in the season, and they really relied on but the defense was winning games, and so I'm like, why did we change? What happened?
Right.
Why did we move away from that?
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, some of it coincides with just the fact that they made the switch at small forward, right? They brought in Wancho instead of Torrey Craig, and I mean,
right.
The offense was really bad when Wancho was in there. I mean, just because defenses were completely ignoring him out to the 3-point line, but.
Mm-hmm.
What we see now on the flip side is that the defense has really, really suffered. And I don't want to put it all on Wancho and say that he's a bad defender, because I don't just think it is that. I don't think it's simply that one player. It's just the timing of that it seemed to happen. Right, though, for whatever reason. I mean, they're not playing good defense at all. That game against the Pelicans, I mean, they pretty much, if the Pelicans wanted to take the ball to the hoop, nobody was going to stop them. From doing it, and that pretty much is was their recipe night in and night out, or throughout the game, possession in, possession out, because they just give the ball to Anthony Davis, especially down, especially down the stretch, and he wasn't, he wasn't necessarily even getting a ton of shots to go down, but he was getting so many free throws, going to the line so much, and he was absolutely automatic, pretty much, from the free throw line.
That's another problem. Yeah, I mean, and the Nuggets have to expect that. You know, they're when they play people like that, they're going to get the superstar call, and they have to be ready for it. They have to expect that to come. I just, you know, what's frustrating is that I felt like the effort wasn't there.
Yep.
And when I feel like they get beat, and they get beat honestly, like, it doesn't bother me. I mean, obviously losing sucks, but really when they get beat and they don't put the effort in, I'm just like, why did I just watch this game? Right. You know what I mean? Like, you guys got to be kidding me. What? Why did you change what you used to be doing? You know, Trey Lyles said it last night. He said, you know, we have to hold each other accountable. And I don't know what that looks like. I don't know who is the one to start that fire, but I think it should be Nikola Jokic as the leader of the team.
Yeah. So. Yeah, that's you know, he's certainly the guy who's everybody's looking to. But I don't know, man. Nikola, he's been going through some growing pains, I guess is the best way to put it.
But he doesn't want to be that guy. Exactly. I think that's the problem. Right. He is the guy, but he doesn't want it.
Exactly. And I mean, I get sort of where he's coming from. Because he wasn't, it's one of those things is Jokic is not like a guy. He's not like a dude who's been living, not like, okay. So like Will Barton has pretty much eat, sleep, breathe basketball like his whole life. That's like the only thing he's ever been doing since he was a little kid. That's not true about Jokic. This all kind of happened really pretty quickly in the grand scheme of things for him. And now suddenly he's this giant superstar with these big expectations, and he's got the ability to do it on the court. At least, I mean, we've seen it how good he is. But you're right; it's almost feel like he never really wanted to be this. You know, he just kind of wants to be one of the guys, right? And just kind of wants to fit in and play basketball and have fun.
He wants to be a role player, but he's not.
He's just too good.
And I think that it's that's what sucks is I think the Nuggets have a problem where they need maybe a leader who's not the best one on the team, like a Draymond Green, you know, somebody who just gets the team fired up and leads them, but doesn't necessarily bring in all the points. Because I just feel like that for some reason, I don't know what it is. I don't know what the cause is, but Jokic gets into these pouts. And so I think, you know, when he gets in that like a slump, the energy and the effort's not there. And when you see Jokic start doing that, the team has a marked decline.
Right.
You know, they start losing games, and so somehow they need to get it motivated.
Right, and they don't have the secondary guy to go to. You know what's funny is because you think about it, when the Nuggets had the most success they've had in the past, you know, over the past really quarter century or so, was, I mean, Carmelo Anthony was their best player, no doubt about it, but he wasn't their leader, right? That was Chauncey Billups.
Right.
And so it's almost like the Nuggets need that guy. They need the second best player on their team, who right now is probably Gary Harris, but hasn't really stepped into that role yet. And he's, you know, him still being a young guy, it's almost like you wish they had that guy who had, you know, had the ability like Chauncey did, who was a really good basketball player, but he also had the cachet. I mean, he was a finals MVP. He was, he was a hometown kid from Denver too, so nobody could talk to him.
Right.
About the city or anything like that. I mean, they need something like that really to help. I think that would help.
Well, I wonder if Isaiah Thomas coming in will help with that. You know, I mean, I think he's got the skill set, he's got the experience, you know, and I think I'm excited for him to come back actually, because I like Isaiah Thomas. And I think, you know, I think we've talked about this before. This is a make or break season for him. Mm-hmm. And so maybe if he can come in and be that leader for the Nuggets, that could really be a game changer for them.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think
quite literally.
No doubt. No, I mean that that's a good point, because I think the only question you have with Isaiah, right, is just a matter of, well, does he still have the skills? Nobody's questioning whether or not he can be that like leadership type of guy. And if he's got if he still has the skills on the court. If he can be back to 100% healthy and still be effective like he was 2 years ago, then you're exactly right. Then he fits into the He fits into that role perfectly. The thing is, too, though, will he be with the team long term? Of course, with the 1 year deal, you got to wonder. And with the way Monty Morris is playing, that'll be an interesting.
Yeah, Monty Morris is. I mean, he's stepping up. I mean, he's showing to be a very viable off the bench option.
Yep.
I mean, and perhaps he's growing pretty quickly. So we'll see what happens with Monte Morris.
Right.
I love Jamal Murray, but I'm always a big fan of healthy competition.
Yeah, no doubt. That's a whole nother.
That's a whole nother podcast.
You go into on that one. All right, so I think we'll probably leave the Pelicans game. There, I guess the one last note I would make is just the contrast. You know, we talked about, you know, Jokic and him not being ready to step up into being the leader and the main, the clear, you know, main guy on the team. Whereas when you look at the Pelicans, I mean, Anthony Davis is that guy, right? He is, he is probably, I mean, in my eyes, he's the best big in the NBA. You could maybe say Joel Embiid or someone like that, but I would probably give it to Anthony Davis. And it's just when you can see the difference between when the Nuggets played the Pelicans the first time without Anthony Davis versus this time, and how, especially in the second half, how they just pretty much, when he said, all right, you know, this is the, right down into that fourth quarter, it came to the point where Anthony Davis was like, okay, now just give me the ball. And I'll just go win this game for us. Like,
I'll just handle it.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the thing you're looking for from Jokic, is for him to be able to.
Yeah, somebody to look to. But he has to want it. And I just, he's not said that he does. So that's the other part, is like, we have to be fair to him and understand that he said repeatedly, I don't want to be the guy. I'd rather pass the ball to the guy.
Right. Rather help his team.
So, but yeah, anyway. Now, Anthony Davis is incredible, and I think you look at, here's my issue, right? Anthony Davis is, I think, talent-wise, you're right, the best big in the NBA. But, like, why doesn't he make his teammates better? You know what I mean? Like, look at the Pelicans right now. They're 9-7. I mean, if you've got the best big in the NBA, don't you think the Pelicans should perform better with Anthony Davis on the team? I don't know.
Yeah.
That's just my...
No, I totally agree, because it's been, I mean, this year, obviously, a lot of their losses actually happened this year, you know, when he was hurt, but yeah. Up until this season, especially, we've seen, I mean, the Pelicans just have never been a team who's been much of a threat at all, even in the postseason.
Right.
If they make the playoffs, you know, they're usually an eighth seed or a low seed. They get knocked out in the first round. Last season, we started to see them maybe put something together. But they fizzled out in the second round, but had a good first round. But you're right. That's the thing that you're really waiting to see, for him to really be like, because people talk about Anthony Davis in the same sort of echelon as, you know, as the best players in the NBA. Maybe, you know, like, okay, not quite as good as maybe a LeBron or Durant, but like right below that, right? You know, and for him to maybe to ascend to that next level, I mean, those guys are champions, so that's the one thing, and he's got a long way to go that. But just to even get closer, it's really got to be, okay, show us that you can make your whole team better and take sustained success in the playoffs. You know, make it to a Western Conference Finals or something like that.
Right. Do something important. I mean, and again, he not to say that he doesn't do important things, but in the regular season, it's great. And he, you know, he has these fantastic games that are just crazy, but then the Pelicans will lose.
Yep.
And it's like, I don't get it. You know, it's just something doesn't make sense with him.
Yep. Yep. I agree. But you know, I think it's, the thing is, he came into the NBA so young, so he's still
yeah.
such a young guy. It's, you're at that point where you're wondering, okay, is he going to go more of a Dwight Howard or a Carmelo Anthony type of guy, where he had all this promise and this skill and was really good, no doubt about it. You know, I mean, Dwight Howard and Carmelo Anthony are probably Hall of Famers.
Oh, for sure.
But never really reached the pinnacle. Or is he going to go the way?
They just didn't have that. They have the missing skill of like being able to win championships. And I don't know if that can be developed. I don't know if that's just something you have. I guess, you know, I didn't realize Anthony Davis was 25. I didn't realize he was so young.
Well, that's because he's been in the NBA for a long time, but it's just...
I feel like, yeah, that makes sense.
He came in as... I mean, he must have been 19 when he came into the league. So.
Okay. Well, and you know, to be fair, you're right. Like 25 years old, gosh, that's like super young to be able to lead a team to a championship. So I'll give him a little bit of leeway there. But I mean, I feel like LeBron James is doing some pretty cool stuff at 25. And I know it's tough to compare people to LeBron James, but if you're talking about people who are the best at their craft in the NBA, you kind of have to compare them to these upper echelon players. And it's just, I think there's two different categories, right? There's a super awesome, you're really good at what you do player. And then there's the different category of you're great at what you do and you're also a champion. So I don't know.
Yep.
It's interesting.
That's very well stated. Very well stated. Okay. Let's go ahead. Let's turn the corner around and we will wrap up our show with, we'll start looking forward to the upcoming week for the Nuggets, who of course now, like I said, they've lost 5 of their last 6. It doesn't get a ton easier right out of the gate. They get the Milwaukee Bucks again. Just lost to the Milwaukee Bucks. That's how I think that was the start. No, the second game of this 5 out of 6 losing streak. Third game. I'm way off. But anyways, so they've lost that team once, and that was at home. Now they'll be in Milwaukee trying to win that game. That, of course, is tonight. And then they follow that up at Minnesota. That one's kind of an interesting one. They'll end out the week at Oklahoma City. So 3 out of their 4 games on the road. They do have the one home matchup with the Magic there on Friday. Ashley, so you think of, I guess those three road teams at Milwaukee, at Minnesota, at Oklahoma City. You hope the Nuggets at least they got to get 2 out of 3, right? Because you want them to go 500 on these 4 road games that they've got right now. But if you had to, I guess, just pick, give me at least the first one. Which one's the easiest one that you think they should be able to win out on the road?
I think possibly the Timberwolves. Mm-hmm. I realize that that's an in-division team, but I think, with where the Timberwolves are at, I feel like they're kind of mixed up right now. I think that's probably the most winnable for them. But with defense a question, I don't know. I mean, they could go 0-4.
Right.
I hope not. But yeah, so I'll say Minnesota.
Yeah, I think Minnesota is probably where I would go as well, just because it's they've had their kind of moment, right, where anytime teams have a player, especially a player where you know he wants out, and you've got this kind of thing hanging over their heads, right? That was, of course, the case with Minnesota and Jimmy Butler. They is to the extreme with Jimmy Butler and him wanting out. Obviously, you always see, even when you give up a player of that caliber, teams generally have a nice hot spurt right after the trade, just because they finally have got that off of their shoulders. They can turn around, they can focus on playing basketball. It's the same thing happened with the Nuggets when they traded Melo finally.
Cathartic. Huh?
Right, exactly. If you remember when the Nuggets played, they played the Sacramento Kings the very first game after the Kings had just traded DeMarcus Cousins. And classically, Nuggets ended up like they lost that game because all these Kings players were finally past the whole drama of playing.
We're free. Yeah, that's funny. No, I think you're right. Minnesota, who knows? I mean, I think it's up in the air because the Nuggets game is up in the air right now. They kind of had their identity for a second and they've lost it for a bit now.
Right. Yeah. You sure feel a whole lot less confident. About the Nuggets than you did a week and a half ago. The other thing, though, I will say about Minnesota is they got shellacked pretty good by Memphis. Though, I mean, maybe we should just start taking Memphis more seriously. They've been playing very well. but maybe that high from the trade has died off now a little bit.
Life.
It's now back on the business, and you actually have to see what this team can do. I thought the Timberwolves actually did okay in the trade, so they've still got a good team. But I just say Milwaukee's going to be tough. Now, I know Jokic always plays really well in Milwaukee, right? There's always a huge amount of Serbian fans who come out for that game. But Milwaukee is just a really, really good team. Hopefully, Brook Lopez doesn't hit like 7 three-pointers.
That was strange. You expect it. I mean, obviously, Giannis is incredible. And, you know, he's something that, I don't know, he's one of those guys that can win, and I think, he is and it will be special in the league, so we'll see. But maybe Jokic will. I think it all depends on Jokic, you know, what his mood is. If he comes out ready to play, typically the Nuggets do well. If he comes out a little tired or pouting or whatever happens to him, then they typically lose.
Right.
So.
Right. Right. And you know the it's so very true. And especially you hope in Milwaukee, though. That's why I have hope for that Milwaukee game, or at least a sliver of hope, because. Like I said, because you know the Serbian fans are going to be out. So
yeah.
And
he tends to be an emotional player, I will say. So I hope that that gets him hyped for the action.
Because the last game of the week, people, you know, maybe one of the lesser talked about things going on in the NBA is, man, the Oklahoma City Thunder are red hot. They have won, what is it? They've won, I think, 10 of their last 11 games now. So, I mean, after they started out 0-4 on the season. They're now 10-5. They actually have a better record than the Nuggets.
Yep. They're on a 3-game winning streak right now. So, That's good. I mean, I think, you know, everybody know, well, not everybody, but people who know me, I'm not a fan of Carmelo Anthony.
Right.
And so I think the fact that he left the Thunder and now they're doing well, and then obviously he left the Rockets and now the Rockets are seems like they're coming back to life. It's just, I don't think it's a coincidence.
No, not at all. Well,
too many common denominators going on there.
That's been, you know, that's kind of been the story for the past few years. Certainly for Mel, even there with New York at the end, but that's the big story about, I mean, there's not a ton different about Oklahoma City other than that kind of change. I mean, they added Dennis Schroeder, right, to be their backup point guard, which is nice. You know, Dennis Schroeder's a nice player and he's a good guy off the bench for you, certainly, to give you that kind of change of pace, give you that speed from your point guard position. But I mean, in Russell Westbrook and Paul George, that's just a great 1-2 punch. And now that they're in, they can pretty much just focus solely on those two guys and let everybody else operate around them. It's paying dividends.
It's a good focus for their team. You're right. I think everybody now knows their role.
Right.
That's a big deal.
Right.
Such a big deal.
Right. And usually, you know, you talk about like a lot of teams, you want like you need those three stars. But Russell Westbrook just dominates the ball so much that, you know,
he can win.
Yeah, exactly. You almost can't have that third star because it's just like that guy's never. Yeah. Gonna, it's just not going to happen.
He's like 2-1,
right,
you know.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So.
No, he can win a game. You know, he's never going to be Mr. Congeniality, that like likable guy, right. But he can get a win.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
You got to respect him.
Right.
For that.
And he's never going to be like the most efficient shooter. He's always going to be a guy who's probably going to be hunting for rebounds, you know, to pad his stats a little bit, but,
yeah,
you know, like you said, he's still going to win you. He's going to win you basketball.
He gets the job done.
Exactly. All right. Last thing before we go. So like I said, we do have the one home game that is against the Orlando Magic. I mean, that's gotta be a must win, right? Because, Orlando is by far the easiest of these three games. Not only are you at home, but I mean, Orlando is just probably the opponent. When you look at these four teams, that's the opponent you certainly see as the team. I mean, Orlando's got a winning record, but they're not a team that you say, man, they're really talented like those other three.
They're beatable.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, it's so early in the season, so it's really hard to say. I mean, but at the same time, we're almost 25. We're getting close to being about 25%, a quarter of the way through. Is this, do you almost look at that as like, that is an absolute must win game?
I do, because it's a home game. And I think right now I would imagine that Nuggets fans are a little nervous. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if the Nuggets drop a couple of these road games, you know, before heading into that, they have to win in front of the home crowd. They have strung their fans out too long to, you know, start on a weird track like this. So I would say yes, to keep their fan base happy, they definitely need to win that game.
Right. Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, because it's funny. Like I said, I mean, Orlando does have a winning record. They're actually
They're leading their division, which isn't saying much because they play in the Southeast, which is just a garbage division so far this year. But yeah. Home of Atlanta Hawks there, who the Nuggets just beat by 45 points. But, you know, so the Magic might sneak up a little bit on people on their talent level. I mean, Aaron Gordon is a very good player. They've got some other guys around that team that you're hoping, you know, again, another team that's kind of playing with a young roster that's somewhere trying to make that next step. I mean, Mo Bamba is a very intriguing rookie. Long potentially could give Jokic some trouble if they get matched up against each other. But there's nothing there that you're saying, oh my gosh, we're not going to be able to overcome this team. So like you, yeah, the fans are really going to be antsy, especially because listen, if you unless you play perfect on the road and knock out these good teams, you know, you're expecting you're going to be dropping one, two, hopefully not all three of those road games, but at least, you know, one, maybe even two of those games there. If you also drop the game at home against the Magic, suddenly you're looking at the second week in a row with a losing record and right. You're getting close to being back down to 500, which is where this team has lived pretty much the past 3 years. So now it's like, was that 9-1 start really just a total?
Was it an anomaly? Is that who you? But the problem is they can do it, and they've beaten the Warriors and the Celtics playing solid. It wasn't a fluke, you know what right. I mean? It's just they're not doing it, and I think that's what's frustrating. So
right,
hopefully they get back to it. I mean,
right, and that's why that Orlando game. I mean, and now to their credit. You could have said the same thing about the Atlanta game, right? That was the game where it was like, all right, they have to win this game. You cannot drop this home game to Atlanta. And they came out and they took care of business. So
it's true. And I think Atlanta kind of let them.
Yeah, it's true. Atlanta's so this would be an interesting test. You got another team that you should definitely beat at home. But unlike Atlanta, who's not trying to win games, certainly not this year. The Orlando Magic are, like I said, they're 9-8, yeah. But they're in first in their division, so they're playing for the playoffs this year.
They're competing, yeah.
It'll be interesting to see how the Nuggets how they show up for that game in the midst of all the, everything else that's going on. See if they can pull it off.
I'm interested in this next game, you know, just to see if they can rebound, to see if they can pull their attitude out of the gutter and keep going.
Right.
So it's maturity point for them, I think.
Exactly, like it's. They've had their gut punch now, you know. It's yep. the all the fun and the national attention and being at the tops of power rankings, all that buzz is gone, and now it's, you know, now it's grind time, and we'll see whether or not they can do it. All right, well, I think that will go ahead and wrap up our show. I want to say thanks to Mr. Mark Grimaldi, who's on with us in the first half of the show, and thanks to Ashley Douglas. Ashley, always appreciate you being on.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Make sure you guys are following us all on Twitter. I'm at Zach Mikosh. Ashley is at Ashley NBA Hoops, right?
That's right. Yeah.
Mark's not on Twitter, but if you just best place to get at Mark is in the comment board, as he is the chief moderator of our comments. But don't be anything but pleasant in there, otherwise I'll feel bad.
Don't instigate.
Yeah, I'll feel bad for sending you over there to Mark if you end up
Mark's
being a
like,
problem.
Thanks a lot.
More work for him. Also follow us on Twitter at the Denver Stiffs, or at Denver Stiffs on Twitter, at the Denver Stiffs on Instagram. Also over on Facebook and on YouTube. We have a YouTube channel now. If you guys want to get pretty much all of the post-game and pre-game press conferences, that is the place to find them, on our YouTube channel. So go over there and hit subscribe. And then, of course, one other place you want to subscribe is to this podcast on iTunes, on Stitcher, wherever. Just look up the Denver Stiffs Podcast Network. This is where you'll find the Pickaxe Pundits, Nuggets Numbers, The Dig, Full Court Press, all kinds of different shows for you guys every week, but you got to be subscribed to that Denver Stiffs Podcast Network to be able to get all of it. So make sure you are doing that and leave a rating while you're there. Why not? All right, everybody, we will talk to you next week.